We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
TickPick should be your first choice to buy basketball tickets because they save fans money by never charging any service fees, ever. TickPick is the exclusive ticketing partner for the Laker Film Room podcast and Blue Wire Network.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. Mike is out handling post-game duties. We are recording this right after the game ended, so no rewatches. This is just our initial quick react. The Lakers fall 121-114 to the Golden State Warriors on opening night in, Darius, what I thought was a roller coaster of a game that had some positives, but also some big red flags. I enjoyed watching a fully engaged Lakers team for all of the good and bad of that. But LeBron and Anthony Davis were amazing. Russ was not. Our defense was touch and go. And when it was bad, it was bad. What are your initial takeaways from this first game?
So let's start with the positives because the end result was not a positive. So let's start with the positives. I thought LeBron looked fantastic and he looks ready to have another dominant season. Just right there, like, I'm going to channel Mike early on, right? Like, just right there as a Lakers fan, like, this result stinks, but I think you have to feel good about where LeBron is. I think the same is true for Anthony Davis, honestly. I thought AD looked great at everywhere except for the foul line, where he was pretty bad again, which dates back to last season. And if it continues, like, 2 or 3 weeks in to the season, I'm going to start to be concerned about the foul shooting, honestly. Tonight, it was a lot of like in and out and like little back rim stuff. And so the shot looked good. It just didn't fall. And so, but it's something I'm keeping my eye on. Another positive to me is I liked Bazemore defensively. And I thought he looked comfortable shooting the corner three. The other threes that he took, not so much. And he took a couple of late ones that were under duress. And those are never going to be as good as the set your feet ones. But look, man, like on the negative side, I thought the Lakers, their lack of depth or the injury issues, the very specific injuries that that they faced in this game. Kendrick Nunn was a game time decision. He did not play. Trevor Ariza's out, THT is out, Wayne Ellington is out. I'm not sure how much Ellington would have helped. Maybe another three-point shooter out there. I thought Monk looked fine for the most part. But and Ellington's not a defensive player. But I thought the potential, at least the potential of more wing defense from THT and Ariza, particularly Ariza for the potential. Again, I'm saying potential because we haven't seen Ariza. But the potential of Ariza having some defensive versatility as well. I thought that mattered this game, particularly in the second half. And when you think of the types of mistakes the Lakers made defensively, it was just the type of mistakes that players who are not used to playing high-level defense or are not considered really like defensive players. Those are the types of mistakes those guys make. And honestly, I'm hard-pressed to think that they're not going to make them for a lot of the season. Like, this is just who they are, honestly. And the more and more we get it on tape, the more and more I think that for some of these guys, that's just what it's going to be. Where are you at?
I first want to separate the game into lineups that we would conceivably play.
Yeah.
On our Frankenstein lineups, right? Like, I think we'll probably talk more about Russ in the second half of the pod, but our things kind of fell apart at the end of the first quarter and the third quarter. And one of the lineups that we played was Westbrook, Rondo, Monk. You would never play that trio together on purpose, with Melo at the four. So you've got four below average to bad defensive players and AD at the five, right? And so it's this like hodgepodge. We saw Avery Bradley in the fourth quarter, which I actually think is probably something we may need to go to in the meantime, kind of a defensive on-ball guy who can spot up, right? That, you know,
there was an instant familiarity with him. Like, they went to that elbow series like two or three possessions.
Yes, and he was like, I've done this hundreds of times with these guys. Yeah,
exactly. Anyways,
so I think that he may see some playing time. I'd like to see us with at least none back. Obviously, THT is a couple weeks away. Trevor is a little bit longer. Even at looking at the roster before the season, we were like, do we have enough defense? If we did, D, it was definitely going to involve those two players heavily, and none as well, right? Like, none's a good guy over the top of screen. So I'd like to see, in separating those lineups, like, there was a lot of bad. You were tweeting about Melo, for example, and I think Melo is defensively really problematic for this team. But there's also a certain amount of like, that lineup's not going to play or not something particularly close to it. Even if we just had one guy back, or even if I'm going to get greedy, give me one more guard and one of the wings that are out. And like, I don't expect a perfectly healthy roster throughout the season, but I do think it would look more normal. But if we were teetering on the edge of, do we have enough defense? I think the injuries have firmly placed us into putting these lineups out there that are like, that lineup does not have a chance to defend. And then at the beginning of the fourth quarter, which is not to say that all the lineups that aren't going to play played bad, and all the lineups that we do want to play played well. We saw Dwight, I thought, had difficulty. The Dwight and Melo combo defending the perimeter, right? I really like Dwight defensively, but that's not a strength of his. And if that's one thing that we did not discuss a ton in the lead up to the season, is defensively on the perimeter, Dwight and Melo may be problematic. And I thought we saw that against Golden State shooters, particularly in that fourth quarter, which is where this game got away.
Yeah, I think stretch bigs are almost going to always give the Lakers problems. Like, I think in an ideal world, you probably would have had AD on the stretch big, right? But the combo between AD, the combo between Draymond and Bielitsa, and Draymond being such a key part of their offense as a screener and a facilitator, and how you want AD sort of in the center of the frame defensively, makes Draymond the natural place for him to defend. And they could have basically just gone away. If you flop that and you put whoever on Draymond and then put AD on Bielitsa to be more of a defensive presence on their shooter, they likely just go away from him. Right. And like, park him in the corner, make AD more of a bystander defensively. And this is where like the Lakers not having that one extra defender. Right. And so down the stretch, there were a couple of possessions where I thought the Lakers finally figured something out, where they said, OK, well, we'll put one of Avery Bradley or Bazemore on Bielitsa. And even though Bielitsa, then he made a little step back against Bradley when he posted him up, and there's some size stuff there. And again, man, like, this is where just another like power forwardy or like sort of like 6'8" dude who can move around and do some stuff would potentially make a difference. Like, just because against the Warriors specifically, I felt like the Lakers' first half performance as a jump shooting team masked
It was unusually good. We were hitting some jumpers in a way where it was, yeah, that's we shouldn't expect that to be a regular thing.
Yes, but also too, like there was a defensive pressure that, and then like a combination with some sloppiness that the Warriors exhibited that allowed the Lakers to get out in transition a little bit more. And even if that didn't always lead to baskets, I thought it gave the Lakers more of a feel of like, this is how we can play to win this game.
I want to talk about that. Like I was, for a good portion of this game, I was encouraged and actually kind of thrilled with our defense, right? It wasn't perfect, but it was like, okay, this, we can work with this. There's something to this. And it was a part of that physicality of that. We really rushed them. The pace of the game for most of it was nuts. And I thought that we kind of weren't able to sustain that. Now, will we in the future? I don't know, right? But I thought that when we were playing with that pace, there's kind of a rushed quality. And I was thrilled to see this style of play really put out there. I've been using that phrase so much lately of style of play, but it's really frenetic. It's really like a different style of basketball.
Where did you think, or how did you think DeAndre fit in to that? Because I am not the biggest DeAndre fan. Like I think that like, I don't think outright said that. Right. But if you follow me on Twitter or online, like, you know that I'm not the biggest fan of his, but I thought he fit in fine.
Yeah, and he was good.
And I thought in a group with those guys, he seemed to be able to hold up in the ways that you would want him to hold up, whereas some of the other players did not hold up as well, even when flanked by comparable talent to the starting lineup that DeAndre got to play with, because he does benefit from playing from basically the Lakers' four other best players around there, and at least, like, at the beginning of those moments, like, LeBron and AD were dynamite defensively. So he is flanked by two forwards who can really cover for him in ways that made a difference. But I thought, I don't want to say impressed by him, but he was at least like a neutral to a slight positive. And that was, I thought, a key part of the game, because some of the other lineups that you discussed, they were not able to do nearly anything positive enough defensively. And for a coach who wants to play defense, like, I thought it was telling that he's like, okay, Avery Bradley, like, you're going to play.
Yeah, tonight. You've been here 2 days, like, going the game in this fourth quarter.
You just got picked up off of waivers, and you're one of the closing five in a game the Lakers clearly want to win. It was a choice. And a choice that I'm not in post game right now, like as we're recording, Mike is. But I'll be very interested to hear if that's a question that gets put to Vogel about Bradley specifically and the choice to go to him down the stretch as a fifth defender. I'm guessing it had to do with the Warriors being very perimeter oriented, but it's clear then that you trust him on defense in ways that like no other player who was on the roster 4 days ago would have been trusted, right? And that's a little bit telling to me.
It is, but I think it's appropriate. I think that it's, you know, we've been playing bad basketball. We are a new team playing a new style that on a roster that we have questions about, especially on the defensive end. And all of that is a recipe for poor defense when you stack the injuries on top of it, right? I think that we are short-term in a trying to resolve some very serious issues with the roster as a result of the injuries on top of just the construct with it as well. So I think we're going to have to do some kind of weird things to tread water for the time being. Because I don't think personally that putting out those Russ, Rondo, Monk, Melo type of lineups are, like, we're not going to be able to survive those lineups. We're going to have, and that's what a lot of this game was, man, is like the starters, they played fine, right? When it comes to DeAndre, we used him to trap a lot. We trapped and scrambled a lot, which is a big part of the pace. And I thought he did a good job of that. He did a good job of his his help responsibilities along the baseline in particular. He was slow in the third quarter in closing out and rotating to shooters, which is kind of like what you are going to get with that. I thought he was good. I thought, or he was fine. I think that his type of player is almost like openly hostile to Russell Westbrook's style of play.
Sure.
So let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk a little bit of Russ. Lakers basketball is finally back, and there's no need to exhaust yourself by searching all over the internet to find Lakers tickets anymore. Because TickPick, that's TickPick, is the original no-fee ticket site. And the only one you'll ever need as your go-to for all NBA tickets. TickPick got rid of all those awful service fees that other ticket sites charge, which lets them guarantee the best prices on all their NBA tickets. Don't believe it? If you can find better prices on the same seats on another ticket site, TickPick will give you 110% of the difference in purchase price. I'm excited to see this Lakers squad get out in transition this year, and there's nothing like seeing a great fast-breaking team in person. Visit TickPick.com/LFR today and use promo code LFR to save $10 on your first order of Lakers tickets.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
So Russ was bad in this game, and I don't want to...
We're not going to sugarcoat it. We're not even going to, I think, give the caveat of, oh, well, rest starts slow. And like honestly, like, that's a different conversation for another night. We're in a post game right now, and let's talk about the game, and he played bad.
He did. And so he was a minus 25. I think he had 6 points, 5 boards, and 3 assists, and was just very kind of lost in finding his way. I thought he got a couple rough whistles, should have gotten to the line a couple of times more than he did, but... So we go big. We start with DJ. It remains to be seen if that is a long-term thing when the wings come back. But I've been like, I think we saw this today, and we saw this with AD as well. This is a recipe for jump shots. If I'm the defense and I see across from me Russ and Bazemore, LeBron, DJ, and Anthony Davis, I'm gonna put 5 bodies in the paint whenever possible.
Oh man, you are setting up shop in there. Like, let's build a table. Let's order takeout. We're gonna sit. Let's get comfortable, my guy.
That's right. And then the non-starting lineups that Russ played with mostly were, there was a sequence, D, where like Russ drove and kicked to Rondo on one play, and he missed a spot up three. And it wasn't like a spot up. It was one of those where you're sliding because the guy's driving toward you. And so your feet are moving, right? Your feet aren't stable. Those are harder threes to shoot. And so Russ drove and kicked to Rondo on one of those. Those are shooter shots. Rondo misses it. Then vice versa on the next play. Russ misses a three off of a drive and kick. And I'm like, this isn't going to, like, Russ and Rondo, like, they can't. That's not going to work. I understand we have injuries, but I thought that the vast majority of his minutes, I thought it was illustrative of the idea that we were talking about over the summer of that, like, you have to cater to Russ, because in that you have to create conditions for him to be able to do what he does, because he cannot go to plan B. He cannot. Anthony Davis had a great jump shooting night. Anthony Davis doesn't always have great jump shooting nights, right? So this is what it looks like with that. With Russ, I feel like a lot of his minutes tonight were in those lineups that are antithetical to what he does.
He played in the worst lineups that are probably, like, the worst lineups for him. And he didn't shoot well enough in order to compensate for that, right? And so if he had an outlier jump shooting night a la LeBron James and Anthony Davis, and both of them probably had outlier jump shooting nights, the Lakers probably win this game.
Yes.
And the narrative around Russ probably hasn't changed, but it's sort of he's not going to shoot this well every night, but it worked this game, right? And it's sort of a take a wait and see look for him. But the flip side of that is what you just said, that these are not ideal conditions. And we understand those to be not ideal conditions. And hoping for an outlier jump shooting night from Russell Westbrook is like hoping, I don't want to say like it's hoping like you're going to win the lottery, but it's like those are not odds that are going to be in your favor.
I mean, you can hope for that on any individual night, but over the course of 82, you're not going
to
get it.
No, you need to plan appropriately for what he is. So here's the thing, though, is, and this is more of a philosophical question, and so I'll pose it now, but we may have to couch this for when Mike is actually here, because I'd like to have a more spirited conversation with more input around this. But there is an argument to be made that LeBron and AD, what you saw from LeBron and AD tonight is basically why the Lakers should be considered title contenders, regardless of what the roster construction is around them, to a certain extent, right? Because they can be that good and they can be that impactful. And catering to them or allowing them to sort of do what they do and not necessarily worrying about the more limited player that's on your team, who is a third star but is more limited than them, there's an argument to be made like, okay, well, sure, let's play through LeBron. Let's play through AD. But there is a different side to that, too. So I want you to jump in now.
But do we want him to be a third star?
That's right. Because
if we want him to be a third star, it's not going to be as a jump shooter. It's not going to be with the paint packed. It's not going to be next to Rondo. Right? And so, like, LeBron James, I dare you to come up with a game plan to make LeBron James not look like a superstar or Anthony Davis when he's locked in like this, right? Yeah. And that's the point. Like, no, it's not the best thing for LeBron and Anthony Davis. We were texting before the game, right, about, like, who we'd be matching up with on Golden State. It was a really fun conversation. And we were talking about the defensive roles. And your point was like, well, Golden State gets into a ton of 4-on-3 short roll situations because they've got all these great shooters. You got to send two on the ball. And you want LeBron on sprinting up to that short roll guy because that's what he's best at. And my counter was like, that's true, but you actually probably, and so that would mean LeBron on, who would that be in that situation?
Like Wiggins probably, because Wiggins, he's weak side wing, right?
Thank you. And so, I was saying, like, you probably need DJ in that role where he's guarding Draymond. That's what it was. We were discussing LeBron on Draymond or DJ on Draymond. And it's like, you know, DJ doing that, he can trap the ball. And then that puts you into, but, like, you have to cater the lineup to the weakest player, because you can't ask DJ to be like, oh, you go take two on the weak side,
yes,
and cover, go cover either the wing three or the corner three. That's it. And so that for me, if you flip that argument to Russ,
yep,
is like, obviously LeBron and AD are better players than he is, but if we want that third star, that productivity of a third star, we need to give him the space to operate in, because he will not be a third star if he's a jump shooter. And how often did he get to the rim in this game? Which is not to say that that is that he is not part of the reason for that, and it's all the conditions around him. Not saying that at all, but these conditions, this is why I've been so adamant about maximizing the spacing around him, because you will get very different players from him if he's a jump shooter versus one that can get all the way to the rack.
So here's the thing, and I agree with all that, of course. It's why you and I do this podcast, is we see things through a similar lens, and what you just said is not just viable, but smart. The thing that is lacking on this team, and I mentioned it in the first half of the pod then, is who's going to be the other front court player, basically, right? Like, who is the fifth starter then? Because there is a lot of options on this team for the fifth starter. And all of them basically make the minimum, or are Kendrick Nunn, right? Or are hurt right now. And, like, there are not very many good solutions for that all-around player that you really want in that spot. When we were talking about this earlier, I had mentioned that, like, the Heat era Shane Battier, right? The guy, and I honestly think that's why the Lakers signed Trevor Ariza, because it is, in theory, and the Warriors are a perfect example of why this specific position guy matters, right? Because in a certain scenario, you want to be able to deploy LeBron and AD onto the defensive matchup that either they could be most impactful in, or that you want to rest them on, right? Like, it's basically that simple. And, like, the resting on is more of a LeBron issue than an AD issue. But you want to be able to say, okay, like, in this game, for example, against the Warriors starting lineup, what you really wanted was someone who could defend Wiggins, right? Because then you could have put LeBron on Looney or on Draymond, and you could have put AD on the other one, Looney or Draymond, and then you could have had someone defend Wiggins, right? But there was no other guy to put on Wiggins. There's no one currently even available to the Lakers. Like, the guy who's even Wiggins sized is Carmelo Anthony. Do you trust Carmelo Anthony to guard Andrew Wiggins? I don't.
Absolutely not.
Do you trust Malik Monk too?
No, he's too small.
Right? And so go on and on and on down the list, and you probably were not going to find a good solution. Maybe the best solution was Russell Westbrook, but I actually liked his size on Jordan Poole a little bit, and I liked being able to deploy Bazemore on Steph Curry, and I thought he did a pretty good job on Steph, right? And so the idea of the fifth starter to me is super important, just from a defensive versatility standpoint, because what you really want is that guy to be able to space the floor some, ideally, and have enough defensive versatility to at least guard two positions, right? Like, can you guard the power forward from the other team, or can you guard the small forward, or can you guard the power forward, or can you guard the center, right? And right now, the Lakers do not have that player healthy right now. Ariza may be that player, but besides that, that player is not on the roster. And my point is, it'd be nice to have a guy like that on the roster. And that means he's probably going to be in between 6'8 and 6'10 and have whatever offensive skill set you want to give him, but preferably can shoot the three and has enough defensive wiles to say, okay, we'll guard one of these two spots. And there's a hole there right now.
There is. I think that Ariza is probably intended for that. I think he's the guy that bridges the idea of proper spacing around Russ with Vogel's proclivities of wanting size and even it's not even just Vogel's proclivity. Like, this is something you've been pointing out, that idea of needing a power forward to do power forwardy things. And a generation ago, Ariza was a three, but I think Ariza is a big three. Like, having a big three with a small ball five, quote unquote, is ideal, right? You want that size. You want the ability to do all that you said there. Now, there's a question of, if the plan is to rely that heavily on Trevor Ariza this deep into his career, like, we shouldn't be too surprised, like, oh, Trevor Ariza is hurt, and that perhaps he shouldn't be the only one like that. And the alternate to that is Carmelo Anthony, who can hit a pull-up three in transition and can triple threat, you know, score out of a triple threat position. But defensively, man, like, I don't know, man. I don't see the future version of that where it's like, oh, we can get him in this defensive role that works where it can. I don't know.
Melo's a guy, and I think you pointed this out a couple of pods ago, where you really need four other defenders around Melo.
Yeah.
Right? And yeah, good luck. Like I thought Melo had some really good moments offensively this game. I also thought he chucked a little bit, but that's
Yeah, his first shift was,
right? But he hit, like, there was that stretch in the third quarter where they went up 10, and then they gave it away pretty quickly. It's like, they got hot on the slot, like, on the slot machine, and then they started to do max bet a couple of times. They're like, oh, where'd my winnings go,
right?
It's like, oh, they're all gone. So that's not it either. But I want to get back to Russ a little bit, because I think we diverted some away from him, and he's going to be a super important player for the Lakers, and optimizing him is important. I do wonder where Vogel's head is on that, optimizing Russ versus, like, okay, well, I need someone else who can do, like, sort of defensive things on the floor for me that we value, right? Besides LeBron and AD. And DeAndre can be big. He can rebound. He can box out the other teams big. And then he's going to run the floor. And those are all things that Vogel values. Like, and he can... We can talk around this idea all that we want, but, like, the Lakers are still going to need someone else who can do other things that Vogel values enough then to promote him into the lineup over DeAndre Jordan, right? But how critical do you think that is for Russ? Because this game, it looked a little uneasy.
I think it's crucial for Russ. I think this is why I've been... Darius, this is year three of the Vogel era.
Yeah.
At no other point have I been this adamant. AD has to play the five. There's no other season where it's been this way. I see the value of two bigs, and I see the value of being able to win those physical battles and all of that. With Russ in particular, there are routes to him being really productive in this environment, and there are environments where you turn him into a jump shooter that doesn't have space to work with. And there's a lot of those too. It's very easy to do. And so I think that it's absolutely crucial. After one game, and he's been here a couple of days, but if you want somebody who can defend and provide some degree of spacing, Avery Bradley would be an example. Like, Bradley and Bazemore, along with our big three, right? That gives you guys who can defend, who can provide some degree of physicality. You're smaller, for sure, but I get what you're saying in terms of being able to provide help defensively, and DJ was pretty good in this one, but even in that third quarter, man, like, a lot of those threes that... Yep. Ended up, like, that's a weakness in his game. And that's not just true of him. That's something that we couldn't get JaVale to do that. We could, and playing the scrambling, frenetic style of play, that is so antithetical to what those big 7 foot guys are good at in the first place, that maybe they'll win some possessions, but over the long haul, that's a really difficult style of play for that type of player to play. And so with respect to Russ, I think this is super important, and that's why I've been banging this drum so much over the course of this offseason, is that I think that we get very different versions of Russ depending on what we put around him.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see where things go from here. I would bet with Ayton on deck, right, the next game, that we're going to see another big lineup.
I do, like, too.
And I'll be very interested and hopeful that none can play the next game, because I want to see some semblance of, like, is Rondo... And I don't want to blame this on Rondo. Like, I thought Rondo played okay. It's just that there are, and I wouldn't mind still giving Rondo a shift if he can, if it's like with LeBron and AD, like with LeBron and AD.
LeBron is the guy to play him with. Rondo and Russ, that's a totally different.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm just saying that, like, LeBron and AD, and look, I'm not in Vogel's head, but I could understand where he was going, right?
Oh,
it's sort of just like, hey, we need Russ to play a little bit more off of the ball. We need a little bit more ball handling and shot creation in here. Normally, this would probably be none playing with Russ. And then on top of that, he might be saying, well, AD and Rondo have this really great connection, but those lineups bled points too often, and they were not engaged enough defensively. And, like, one of the things that was very noticeable to me in the second half is that, especially in the fourth quarter, the game slowed down. And when it slowed down, the Lakers were not able to generate any of that sort of frenetic pace. And the way that you can do that from nothing is by ramping up your defense.
Defense, yeah.
And they didn't have enough defense out there. And that's really where this game was lost to me. Like, we can point at Russ, and Russ had some issues defensively as well. He got lost on a couple of back cuts, like the Warrior split cut action gave him some issues on a couple of possessions where he lost Jordan Poole once. He lost Damian Lee another time, and I think he committed a foul on that swipe down on Wiggins, and then he got a technical foul arguing, right? And so there were definitely some bad Russ possessions, and offensively I just thought he had a rough night, and that comes down to some lineup stuff, but in the end, like, the Lakers are going to need to defend. They need to find more guys who can do it, and if you're going to play this many non-defensive players, then they need to shoot better than they shot from the floor tonight. And
look, the line, yeah.
Like you can't have it both ways. Like, you can't be like, oh, well, we're trying to trot out these great offensive lineups and then basically go like 15 for 42 from three. Bazemore went 2 for 8 again. AD took 5 of them. Bron was 5 for 11. Like, I like that. So, to be fair, Monk and Carmelo went 2 for 4 each. So that's pretty good production from them. But big picture, man, you probably need 4 or 5 makes from one of those guys.
To me, it has more to do with the defense than anything else. Like, yeah, the jumpers, I think that, again, I think we're creating conditions for jumpers for our worst jump shooters in a lot of respects. But again, that's something we'll continue to discuss. But yeah, defensively is where, because when we were creating stops, we were creating turnovers. And that's why I don't want to end this pod totally pessimistic or negative. There were longer stretches of this game where it was like, okay, we've got something defensively of being physical and forcing turnovers and, you know, kind of creating havoc. I saw the emergence or the beginnings of a defensive identity that we don't quite have the personnel for yet, but there's something to work off of, but we still have a lot of work to do. This was a step in the right direction, but we got a lot of work left to do. We'll be here to cover all of that and more on the Laker Film Room podcast.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn, he's double team. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's in. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound is Lowry. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. The
It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds.
Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two. One.
Miss it.
Bryant.
Unbelievable.
For the victory.
It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant. Yeah.
With a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.